Hello and welcome to Journey to a Dream, which I'm delighted to say is now brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. Today's interviewee really doesn't need much of an introduction. I have no doubt that you will have heard him before. Let's get straight to it.
My name's Chris Kinley, Manx Radio TT commentator, commentator for the Southern 100 as well, Manx Grand Prix all around the world, doing motorbikey stuff and very bald.
Motorbikey stuff, yeah. Chris. Tell me your earliest motorbikey memory.
Blimey, growing up in Castletown, not difficult to be fair. Growing up on Maloo Street, 149 Maloo Street, if you want to be really precise about it, which looked on our front door of the in the street, looks up towards Castletown Corner, or the bridge, as it's fondly remembered at the Southern 100. Just growing up as a kid and going out at 5 o'clock in the morning because it was early morning practices, and just watching these bikes just going past. Just if you're going back up towards Castletown Football Stadium, there's a little rise in the road, so conversely they then appear and then drop down and in and around the corner and away. It was all two strokes mainly, a lot of four strokes now with that lovely two stroke haze in the air, so probably four or five. And then we were allowed to go out the back door of the house, which took you to a little lane, which took you up onto where they have the grandstand, etc. there. And that's my earliest memory. And then when you got a bit older, you could walk down to the paddock. But then you could walk down and be, you know, left alone. No health and safety, no worries. Obviously, you were mindful, you know, because you knew everybody involved with the Southern 100 Club, as I still do now. And yeah, it was good, very good.
So was motorbiking in your family then?
Nope. Not at all. Dad had a bike when he was growing up. I say a bike, it was a Vespa Lambretta thing we used to go fishing on. He'd be obviously riding it and I'd be on the back with a bat box with the fishing rods in. We go to Peel, we go all sorts. Yeah, there'd be nobody in the family at all, real motorbikers at all.
So really it was just growing up where you did and seeing the bikes that really sparked that interest.
Yeah, you tell anybody my sort of age. I mean, prime example, Milky. Milky lived in top of Colby, Ballykill Ferret there. So again, he'd be the same as me. Get up early morning practices, go down and watch. His dad was involved. Dennis Wads, God love him, etc. And that's what you kind of did, you know, in that sort of time. We played. We did boy stuff. We played football. We played British Bulldogs. We did all that. But we waited for July because in Castletown, Southern 100 on the Thursday afternoon, you got the afternoon off, so that was great. But to be involved, and then when you got to 16, you could marshal. But then beforehand, you were helping the club, all the guys like Tubby, Georgie Peach, and well done to George on winning the award the other week. Absolutely brilliant stuff, you know. And you're involved, and they let you get involved. You know, you weren't given anything dangerous to do. You still put the bales out, put the stobs out, put the ropes up. You felt part of it. It was great.
And at 16, did you marshal?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. At Castletown Corner, predictably enough. Did that first session. Then obviously marshalled at the TT, Manx Grand Prix as well, and also up at Jerby. And we did that. I was on the flag at Stadium Corner for a long, long time. And also the finishing flag where, obviously, you stood last year when I was at Cross Four Ways, on that where that flagman stands out. I did that for quite a few years as well.
And what is your outstanding memory of marshalling down there?
Oh, blimey. Lots and lots of good memories, actually. Lots of characters, lots of real good characters. A lot of them no longer with us because I'm getting old now and everybody seems to be no longer with us. But yeah, lots of good memories, and you learnt a lot from people. You know, there was no rubbish. That they said to you, look, if something happens, just follow my lead. And as you got more experience, you have another young guy coming up and you would pass that on. So just people like, you know, Henry Qualtro, who's still there at Castletown Corner. Billy Condon, no longer with us either. Billy was the sector marshal there at the bridge. Although Victor was on the flag at Castletown Corner as well. And he should always stand with Victor and just watch him. And I always remember Golden Rule, he said to me once, when you're doing the flag, he says, you're not looking up the road, you're looking where the bikes are going. So if somebody falls off, you can get the flag out instantly. So he always had somebody watching his back, and that happened to be me at one point, and I wasn't watching him as going. He just went, oi! He said, come on. He said, you've got to be watching up the road for me. If anything happens from stadium to me, and I need to get out of the way, you need to be telling me this. So yeah, that sticks in your mind, and I've always passed that on to people. They say, oh, where am I going to sit? And where am I going to watch? I said, yeah, but look, but if there's a couple of you, have one looking back up the road as well, because it's motorbike racing. We know how dangerous it can be.
Was there ever a point where you thought, actually, I want to be the person out there competing on the track?
Yes and no. Yes, I wanted to. No, I thought, no. It's a lot of money. I mean, you look at these guys, I mean... They'd raffle off a lung if they could go out racing next weekend. Double mortgages and all these things, you know. And if you're lucky enough, you get good at it, you get the top deals. But all the privateers is what they are. They're privateers. They beg and borrow and they just get help from friends, family, you know, whatever, fundraisers, etc. And I would have loved to have done it, but obviously I couldn't at the time.
And any regrets now, do you think?
Not at all. Not at all. When I look and I see a lot of the guys who went racing when I was that sort of age, they've got fingers missing, they've got, you know, all things like this. And I think, do you know what? I'm happier on this side of the microphone.
You want to keep your lovely looks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I've bashed around the head a few times. It's not damaged me any done, but it's all right, you know.
Do you know, Chris, something that I've been finding doing this podcast is just how much support there is here for people who are dedicated to motorsport, who absolutely just want nothing more than to race on the roads and some part of the course on the Isle of Man. And again, that's, I mean, you mentioned Derby. I mean, it's something that you're hugely involved with.
It is, yeah. We're just getting ready for the new season, to be fair, at Derby test day. I mean, I wouldn't want to be doing the first test day that they had anyway, because it was a bit wet, a bit windy, and a bit horrid, to be fair. But there was a lot out there, a lot of young ones out there as well, which is good. A lot in the race school. You know, we've got a few more sidecars this year, which is great to see. Dave Molyneux's coming back again, you know, people like that. But yeah, it is a breeding ground. You take the last couple of Senior Manx Grand Prix winners, you've got Joe Yeardsley, you've got Nathan Harrison, who's won it, Marcus Simpson was on the podium last year at it as well. They've all been there or thereabouts. You've got the Kringle boys now, multiple centre champions up there as well. I mean, even Dave Molyneux 2 years ago was a sidecar centre champion, you know, so there's life in that old dog yet, believe you me. But yeah, we've got a really good setup up there now. We're really, really good, and good young ones coming, like I said, good age on them as well, like 14, 15, 16 year olds all coming through, and it is good to see.
And how important is it for the Isle of Man, particularly being seen as such a mecca for motorsport, for it to be so encouraging to that new talent?
It is, because it costs them a lot of money. If they want to go away, they want to go to Aintree, they want to go to Donington Park, they want to go here, there and everywhere, unless they're getting help from sponsors, you know. I know the Steam Packet and other people help, you know, people get across. They've got to go to Derby, and they've got to learn the craft. And we've got a great race school up there. You've got Johnny Heggenbotham, Traveller Marshall, he is. You know, we've also got Gary Ratcliffe up there as well. Gary, former Manx Grand Prix winner himself too. So we have a good set of guys, and Dave Bosner, sorry Dave, must mention you as well. We have a lot of guys giving their knowledge, like I said about Vic before, the flag marshal, giving me knowledge to pass on to other people, you know. And the youngsters coming up are getting good. They really are getting good. A young lad up there, Reese Callister, the other year was giving Norman Neen a heck of a run for his money. Norman Neen, Manx Grand Prix winner himself as well, and they had some great battles. Bear in mind, this kid's only 16, and Norman in his 60s, you know, they were battling, knocking lumps out of each other, but all fair in love and war, as they say. It was really, really good. And that, to me, is what it's about. That young fellow was sat behind Norman. He will have learned so much, you know, and he'd have stuck up the inside and up. Norman will do the same the next lap, but all fair, you know, and passing on knowledge. Yeah, it's brilliant.
And in terms of the fact that you've said that, you know, maybe at one point you thought, maybe I'd like to do that myself, how well do you think you understand the mentality of somebody who sits on a start line, who can just put everything else aside and just go hell for leather sometimes?
I don't think any of us doing what we do, Beth, can understand why they want to do it. You can see why they want to do it, but everybody has got a different mindset. You look at Michael Dunlop when he goes to the start line, focus, number one, that's all I want. Other guys, I'm not saying they're not going to be number one, but they might be a little bit more relaxed, a bit more jovial, a bit more happy on the start line. And you'll get guys, you know, I know, you go to speak to them, not interested. You go to the guys, hey, get this, hi, Beth, how are you? You know, like that. And you can't understand their mindset. You can understand why they do it, why they want to do it, but all their mindsets are completely different. They all have a different goal. Michael Dunlop wants to win. All the privateers want to get there. They want to do the TT. They want to do the Grand Prix. They want to finish. They have to finish. That is the end of it. That's their goal. If they get that little finisher, if it's a bronze rep or a silver replica, bonus more, but you're guaranteed that finishing medal if you finish the race. And that, I mean, TT is not a race, it's a trial. It's a time trial.
Okay, so we have 16-year-old Chris Kinley. He's done his marshalling at the Southern 100. Talk us through how your career has progressed.
I kind of marshalled for quite a few years, and bear in mind, I did first did the pit lane job in 2003, so that makes this year my 21st year. I know, that's a bit scary. Obviously, take the COVID years out, etc. But yeah, it was a 21st year of doing it. And I've always been involved up at Derby with the club up there too. And then I kind of stepped away from that and kind of got more involved doing the radio stuff, not doing motor support, but doing sport. And then I kind of always been involved with the Southern Club, marshalled, I say, for years, moved away for a few years, and but then still came back and marshalled when I could. If I could go back to being 16 years old again, and I could have had the chance of doing a bit of racing, I probably would have done. Yeah, but I still would have enjoyed helping them out, helping the club marshal, helping the club do this, do that. I wish sometimes, I think back, I wish I could have given a bit more to the Southern Club and gone on the committee and done this and done that. But again, you just, life gets in the way, kids, whatever, it all gets in the way of stuff. But yeah, 16-year-old Chris Kinley, bit of hair. Blimey. It's scary to think back how long ago that was. 16 years, 53, so that's 37 years ago. Heavens above. Yeah, I don't know if I'd want to change it. I think I'm quite happy with what I do. You can't change what's been. You know, what's been has been and what's done is done. Time machine, great, you go back and change it, but I don't think I'd want to.
But you have been an integral part of the sport in all the different facets that it happens over here. People hear your name and it's just synonymous with motorsport. How do you do what you do? How do you know everything that you know, and how do you stay so relatable?
I don't know, really. I don't know, to be fair. I kind of have a habit of reading something and taking it in and being able to have it in the back of my brain. All of a sudden, bang, it'll pop in. It's like I was listening to a pop quiz on another radio station, which is Radio 2, 10 to the top this morning, whatever it was, and the guy got 26 points and I battered him. Kate, well, what do you do that? How do you know that stuff? How do you know that was that person? I said, I don't know. I can just get it in and it's in there. Piles and piles of books here, there and everywhere. When you're doing our job, pointless. Make a few little notes and just refer to them. That's all you need to do. You find in this game, when you're interviewing somebody, if you know what you're doing and you can interview, you can say to them, right, Beth, blah, 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 lead on to something else, lead on to something else, lead on to something else. If you're just asking them formulate questions, they'll get bored. They'll get bored and, you know, you find it hard to speak to them. So, yeah, how to remember all the stuff, I have no idea. Can't remember part of the car half the time. Honestly, I can't remember where my glasses are half the time, you know, but things like that just stick in the head.
And it's, of course, not only over here that you cover sports events. I mean, you've been all over the place.
I have, quite lucky, done Scarborough for a couple of years. They've had a change there at the moment, and I might be back there in a few years, who knows. Armoy, done the Cookstown 100. I've done Armoy again this year, BBC Northern Ireland for Radio Ulster at the Northwest 200, done the Ulster Grand Prix, done the Mid-Antrim 150, been over to Macau, done all sorts of different things. I've been asked to do lots of things, been asked to go to the IRRC and do that across in Europe at some point. But again, it's finding the time. It really is finding the time. And then you've got to take time off from here to go there and stuff. It is nice. It's really nice to be asked. You know, really is nice to be asked. And you get that phone call. Ah, Chris, how you doing? Are you available? Yeah, no problem at all. Let's get it booked. And it just happens. I'm looking forward to going to Armoy again.
How do you cope with the more difficult side of this sport?
I just do. Some people say, and talk to a few boys down the pub about it, and they say, you know, how do you deal with the fact that, you know, you're going to be the last person? Now, if I think back, and I really think hard about this, the amount of people I've been the last person, apart from their team member, to speak to them before they gone out, James Cowton, case in point, Southern 100. I was the last person to speak to James before he went out onto that 600 race at the end of that thing. And you just have to not block it out. Block it out is not the right word. It's just remember it and remember it with fondness, to quote Roy Moore. Oh, remember him with fondness. But I kind of do. It's not being hard-faced. It is difficult. And it's difficult. I have related this in interviews before. And when Trevor Ferguson got killed at the Manx Grand Prix, and Ryan Farquhar, I know Ryan and Karen, the family, very, very well. And Ryan was on the pit opposite me. And it came through from the producer in the tower. Don't mention number one. There's been an incident. Not 10 seconds after that, Ryan Farquhar goes, "Hey, Chris. Hey, Ryan, how are you? Yeah, yeah. Any news about Trevor's?" No idea. Haven't got a clue. And, you know, everyone say, well, you know, how do you... It's difficult, you know, with these people that I know and spend time with in the pub and having a bit of crack and a bit of banter, not to be doing it, you know. And I did go up to Ryan later on and I said, look, I did know what happened, but I said, look, I fully, fully appreciate it. You know, it's not a problem. It's your job. You know, I'm not telling lies. I'm just not allowed to say, just, you know, please do not mention such and such a person. It is difficult. It is very difficult. It's the rubbish side of the sport, you know, but this sport is full of so many highs. I mean, massive highs. Thinking about it coming in, I think, oh, if she asked me about the highs, and I thought, God, I couldn't mention them. I've got 10 fingers. I've got 10 toes. There's not enough space for it, to be fair. The amount of good times, but then the bad times kind of do nothing for six. And when Paul Shoesmith got killed, we went down to Bushy's to the tent, only because Shelley Rourke was on Shelley and she was singing Prince Purple Rain, as she does such a great version of it. And I got a tap on the shoulder from someone. They went, oh, terrible that about Shoey. And I burst into tears. It's just because I already knew, but nobody else down there knew, you know. And it's like I'm going for a wee and everyone's going, oh, Kinners, have you heard about that? I'm like, but you just got to get on it. You just have to deal with it, you know. And, you know, it's part of the game. It's the wrong thing to say. It's the right thing to say. It's a game, but it is. It's a sport. It's a game, you know. And the rewards are fantastic. And, you know, the horrible bit's horrible. But there you go. That's what it is.
Well, you know, now I'm going to ask you about some of your highs because, I mean, a lot to look back on and I'm guessing pretty impossible to come up with the top one. But maybe let's go for maybe the most unexpected thing that has happened to you.
I think it's the twice in 2 years with the chain off thing. Guy Martin and Richard Britton. Richard Britton first, then Guy Martin. And somebody said to me, how many times did you say the chain? I said, I have no idea. I said, but I was trying to relate it, trying to get the enthusiasm. And in that time, though, Beth, I could actually be beside the bike. So I heard the chain when it went clunk like that back on. There was a clunk like that when it went back on, which if you listen very carefully to the audio of it, you can actually hear it go clunk. You know when you've been a kid and you've had to run the wheel round? I did, and it's no good for radio, but you see that finger there? See the way it's all misshapen? No, that was a chain jumping off a sprocket on my push bike, and my hand got caught, my finger got caught in. So if you're having your tea while you're listening to this, and that's what's caused that. All these years ago, it was probably 40-odd years ago, and the scar's still there, and I remember doing that, and that's went through my head at that time when that chain clunked on. Davey Lappin was the guy who was on the rear sprocket for Richard Britton that day. God love Richard, lovely chap. And Davey was such a cool mechanic. Hey, Davey, okay? Aye, that typical Irish soft drawl. I seen him the other year at the Northwest Rundy, he was a good crack. And I think about that crunch noise, and I've thought about my finger then.
Richard Britton gets the cap on. It's not going to start next. Chain, there's no chain. The chain's jumped off the sprocket. The chain's jumped off the sprocket. Somebody stop him. Chain's jumped off the sprocket. The chain's dropped off the sprocket for Richard's machine there, so I don't think they've noticed. So let's go down. The chain's off. Chain's off. The chain's off, so Richard, oh no, absolute unbelievably, the chain has jumped off the sprocket there. Watch your fingers, the chain's gone back on, a bit of a clunk there. I'm sure you must have heard that, they've got it on now. Is Richard going to get it going? Is he going to go, is he flooded? Let's see, he's off. Wow, absolute drama. Tell you what, the chain was off there. So Richard's team on the case there.
And then it happened a couple of years ago with Guy. Guy's chain snapped as he was just about to leave the pit. Yeah, that was just totally unexpected. But again, somebody says, well, why are you just saying the chain? I says, because that's what happened. And I'm trying to run after him. And you can hear it in the audio clip. I'm sprinting down pit lane trying to keep up with them, because those days I could be that side. You're not allowed now, obviously, but I could be that close to them, you know. And imagine, you know, some of the things happen, the pit stop, the bikes going on flames and stuff, you know. You think back to that, you think, whoo, that's a bit close. And I'm quite happy now that I'm a bit further away, and I think I could probably run after some of these guys. But bear in mind, don't forget then, there was no speed limit in pit lane. It was a stop box at the top. And if you get a bike coming halfway down pit through pit lane where the podium is, they could be doing 120 mile an hour and they're going past you. So you had to have your wits about you, I can tell you. But yeah, the chain off, yeah, that was totally unexpected. And I know somebody turned it into a ringtone as well. So I know.
You literally got the T-shirt too, didn't you?
I know, I did, yeah. And Gary Thompson's done his tension panicking thing as a, and that's his ringtone when his phone goes off as well. So yeah. Yeah, that was unexpected.
You just talked about how when you were in the pits initially, there weren't the speed restrictions. You could get up close and personal. I mean, a lot has changed in a relatively short space of time.
It has, absolutely. When I first went the pits, I was just told, like, so, okay, what do we do? Okay, you got to be here. And I'd say to the teams, right, are you doing a rear tyre? Yes, all right, I'll stay out your way. What are you doing at the front? Right, you're doing that. I'll stay out your way there as well. You know, and then some of the teams, what are you doing? Not telling you. Will you put it out on air? I says, I won't. I says, it's for me to know that if you're going for the rear tyre, I do not want to be bouncing around the back of your bike, looking up the road for bikes coming in, you know, and keeping a little ear out. And, you know, I think back to some of the times you've just been, get out of the way. And I'm not a big guy. And some of them guys are big guys. Just push her out of the way. You know, you just have to have your wits about you. Wow. Thinking back to some of them pit stops, some of them so intense, you can just feel it. Honest to God, really. When a race is like Sophie Connor's pit stop, when Connor, when the clutch burned out, he should have won that Formula One TT on that Saturday. He should have won that. That was his for the bag, and the clutch went, and he was out at Laurel Bank or something like that. When that bike would not go, I was down there, and you could just sense it. The team knew straight away that it wasn't right. And you feel for Connor, and obviously what happened later in the week was probably worse for him, but he's got back to it again now. But yeah, you just have to be. You just have to be mindful when you first get the microphone, you know, a microphone and a rubbish talk back unit with it sounds like that in your ear. It's awful, you know. But nowadays, it's a lot cleaner now, isn't it, what it used to be, yeah.
Who did you learn your craft from then?
Oh, no one. Absolutely no one. Because I talked to the late Jeff Cannell about it, and I said, Jeff, they've asked me to do the pit lane this year. Any ideas? And he says, nope. He says, be yourself. He said, just be yourself. He said, don't try and be me. Don't try and be Peter. Don't try and be anybody. He says, just try and be you. He said, the most important thing, as we know from working in radio, paint a picture. You've got to paint a picture. You know, because people say, you know, well, why do radio people feel the need to talk all the time? It's because you haven't got a TV screen to back you up. There's like a football match. You've got to keep going. You've got to say number seven with the yellow socks with the red imprint round his number seven. Got a little wristband on. You know, you've got to give information like that to people. You know, when you're doing the job that we do, you can't just say, yeah, there he is. Oh yeah, there he goes. You just can't do that, you know. So yeah, Jeff just said to me, look, he said, I'm not going to give you any advice, and it wasn't him being nasty or anything like that. It was just Jeff saying, do it your way, because he was the first person to do it, you know, and it was his style. And his style was absolutely fantastic. If you get to the level he'll be, well, his knowledge as well, it's just incredible. But yeah, absolutely, just do it yourself. If you ever get the chance, when I retire, hooray! When I retire, if you're listening to this, just do it your own way. Do it your own bat.
And the thing is, you really immerse yourself in the whole event, particularly if we talk about TT, MGP, because you tend to like to go up there, to stay there, just to soak it all up.
Absolutely. And just to get information that, I mean, I'm quite lucky in some respect that, and I don't often blow smoke wherever smoke gets blown, but I get told stuff that I'm not supposed to tell anyone, and I won't tell anyone. But then I know, because he knows or she knows that I've got that information's for me. You know, I mean, I get told about, oh, such and such a rider will be with him in 6 months. And people, oh, what do you think about such and such going to him? I'm like, oh, really? Oh, didn't know that. I know what's going on, but I won't impart it, because as soon as you break that trust with them, they won't give you anything. You interview me. So how was that then, Beth? It was all right. Yeah. Was the lap good? Yeah, it was fine. Yeah, any check? No, not bothered. You'll get that from them. But when you get their trust and you get somebody and they'll just open up and they just give you and give you and give you, because they know that what they're going to get when they tell you some stuff, you know, is you know, it's trust. I think trust is the way. That's the word, trust. That'll do. Yeah, trust.
And in terms of the audience for, we think about TT, MGP, I think it has evolved over the years, hasn't it? And I just wonder, from your point of view, like, for people who don't really know the nuts and bolts, I'm not talking about myself, but I could be talking about myself, the nuts and bolts of like, yeah, bikes and how they work. I mean, is it possible to really understand the event?
It is. And you say about nuts and bolts, so when I first started, there was hardly any of this plugging in with the computers and stuff and all this data logging and all this. There was not much of that went on, really. But now they're all at it. Every team is at it. Every team's bike. So you just come in, plug in, tap, 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 tap. And away they go. They're looking at suspension, throttle position, set, all these different sensors. They're looking at this all the time. And you've got to try and explain it. The way somebody said to me once, you have to explain it every time. You might know what they're talking about, but somebody's here for the first time, they haven't got a clue. What's a throttle position sensor? What's a lambda sensor? What's this? What's this? What's that? Why have they taken the pressure off the tyre? Why have they got a little thing, a little carpet thing on the front? What's that for? People don't understand that, because people, there's always a new audience to all sorts of sport all the time. So the way the TT has evolved, you've got people coming here now are coming, A, because they've seen it on the telly, they've seen the rush, they've seen the TT Live stuff, they've seen Guy Martin wobbling on about it on his Channel 4 series, they've seen all this, and they want to come and experience, if it's only for one time. So when you see them, you'll always see them walk around the paddock, and honestly to God, they're like a kid in a sweet shop, walking around with their eyes on like saucers, just look around saying, oh my God, and they'll go, oh, you're that Chris Kinley guy. And I say, yeah, how's it going? And I say, oh, I've listened to you on the radio and such like. And then what'll happen is they'll go, oh, well, there's John McGuinness over there, so we'll go and speak to him. Oh, God, do you not have to have a pass to go and see him? I says, no. I says, you just go and speak to him. And they go up and they're like, oh, wow. And that's what makes TT accessible to people, the Manx Grand Prix accessible to people, the Southern 100 accessible to people. It's because of that. It's because the guys are open. When they're in the job zone and they've got all the gear on and stuff like that, different world, they speak to us because they've got media obligations to do. And they'll do that. A lot of them do it very, very well. You know, but when a lot of them, like I said before, by Michael Dunlop in the zone, leave him alone. If he doesn't want to talk, he doesn't want to talk. End of story. And I do get what some of them say. I don't get a minute's peace to myself. However, that's the chagrin, I'm afraid. That's what you've built yourself up for. They want to see Peter Hickman. They want to see Dean Harrison. They want to see Nathan Harrison. They want to see Paul Jordan. They want to see these guys, and they want to speak to them. And I think a lot of the fans now, though, a lot of the fans have realised that when they get into the business end, just back away a little bit, I think, because it was getting a bit bad at one point. They were not being left alone at all on the start line. And thankfully, the organisers have taken us on board and just said, right, certain amount of people here, that's the end of it. You know, to give these guys the space.
Have you ever had to put a microphone under somebody's nose when they really didn't want to?
No, because I wouldn't. Absolutely not. I'd go up to someone, say for example, if something happened, let's say for example, Peter Hickman's leading the senior TT by 40 seconds, comes in for the pit stop, bang, clutch goes, can't go. So I'd look over to Pete and I'd go like that, and if he shook his head, I'd just walk away. Just fill it and just say, Pete doesn't want to talk. Obviously very upset, blah, 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 blah. And we've had situations like that where last year they went up to you guys in the Parc Fermé area after the cool down after 5 minutes and you had a chat. That's just it. You just have to respect them. They're human beings. They've just put everything that they have and want into winning a TT race, and it's been taken away by something dead simple like a clutch cable breaking or anything, like 10p washer, anything daft like that. And it's gone in an instant, and all that hard work gone.
And, you know, talking about the people at the front of the field and how much goes into it, for many people, it's those, and you mentioned it before, the people who just want to get on the start line, who just want to finish a race, and the joy and the elation that you see, even if they have finished and they're last.
Or pushed in.
Yeah.
Thing is, when they come in after the race, I'll have been down in the winner's enclosure bit, and then you guys drop the top, then you get to have that reaction. I mean, you get some of the guys, especially more on the Manx Grand Prix, because the guys, the TT, have done the Grand Prix before. But when those young fellas, and they're young people, they're in their 20s, the early 30s, they're young people, have achieved their dream. They have got over that line, they've done three laps of the Manx Grand Prix, the TT circuit, whatever you want to call it, and they've come in, they've got off the bike, and you know what, all the thoughts about how am I going to pay this bill, how am I going to pay that bill, how am I going to pay my tyre bill, they don't care about that. They'll care about that tomorrow, because they've just completed what they want to do today. They're going to go to the beer tent and they'll have a chat with you, they'll have a chat with whoever's doing the job, Palmy or whatever, and it's absolutely fantastic when you hear that elation in their voice that they've completed the dream. Absolutely.
Now, you wouldn't say this because you are incredibly self-effacing. But I think one of the things about you, Chris, and I talked about you being relatable before, is you are just you. There is no pretense or no, I don't know, there's just no act with you, which is why I think people do feel that they can come to you, they want to talk to you, they want to tell you things. And you do support a lot of newcomers as well, because I'm guessing you get a lot of people coming up and asking for advice. So if there's a newcomer who's hoping to get to the start line this year, what would you tell them?
Live it. Live it, do it. If you get the chance to do it, there's so many friends of mine have been lucky enough to do the TT, the Manx Grand Prix, the Southern 100, get a chance to do it, just do it. Because once it's gone, it ain't coming back. You know, you get the chance to get your entry in, you get your mountain course signatures, just do it. And you know what? They go to the Irish races and stuff and they go, right, I'm doing Armoy, then I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm going to do five track days to get all my signatures. Oh, what's up? For? I'm doing the Manx next year. Good on you. Well done. And you know what? A lot of young Owen O'Shockery, people like that, all coming through from the Irish scene, all these, just come and do it. You know, just come and do it, because you'll regret it. You will regret it. And you'll be sat there on the hedge when you're mid-50s like me, thinking, oh, I wish. You said before about one of my memories, best memory ever, is my old mate Bruce Anstey, who's living in Northern Ireland now as well, when he came back and won that 250 race. And there's that picture of him cuddling me, and I think he broke me glasses, actually, so he owes me for that. Yeah, and that was just great. And me and Bruce and Annie, we get on really, really well and stuff. And yeah, that is my best memory from it so far. Hopefully there'll be a few more yet.
Have you been round the mountain course at race speed?
I've been at speed you're allowed to go when the roads are open. Let's put it that way, because I would never break the speed limit, being a very law-abiding citizen here on the Isle of Man. No, I would love to do a parade lap, to be fair. One thing I would always love to do, but again, headphones and a microphone. However, technology's moved on. We could ding the lap, couldn't we?
We could absolutely arrange that. If anyone's listening who can organise that, perhaps you in a sidecar, perhaps? Would you...
No bother. But it'd have to be a small bike, though, because it needs to be able to touch floor. So like an ER6 or something. I would do it at the drop of a hat, absolutely. And you might get a few dead areas through Glen Helen, thinking about it technologically and then engineering-wise, and maybe through the back of Sulby. But I think it's doable.
I want you to go and have a word with the engineers now. As we are speaking, we are not really that far away from TT 2024. What do we think we're going to see this year?
Fireworks, complete and utter fireworks on the first night. All the different, you think about the people who've moved machines, okay? Hickey stayed where he is, Dean Harrison. He rode the absolute spuds off that Kawasaki last year to get anywhere near where Hickey and Michael Dunlop were, and Connor and people like that. Look out for Connor as well. I think we're going to see something really, really special at TT 24. And of course, the sidecar boys breaking that 120 mile an hour lap last year, two of them, Fownsy and one Birchall, as there will be now. What are we going to see from them? We're going to see 121. Dave Molyneux's changed back outfits as well. It is going to be good, really, really good. Can't wait.
I'm going to give you a shiny pound if you say the chain's off at some point.
No.
Chris, the chain's off Kinley. And honestly, if anyone can help him sort out a lap around the TT course, we've had the chat with the engineers. We think it might be possible technically. It'd be great to sort something out. Thank you so much for listening to this Journey to a Dream podcast, which has been brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. You can visit them at kawasaki-insurance.co.uk to find out how you can get covered. And if you've got a story you'd like to tell me, I'd love to hear from you. Beth Espy at manxradio.com is the email address. And until next time, take care. Bye-bye.